Good morning. How are you guys doing today? What's the statute of limitations of saying Happy New Year? Like, can I go till March? Like, what? When can I stop this? All right. First off, definitely want to thank Pastor Dave for giving me the opportunity to speak. Like Brent said, he is going to be back with us next week, continuing this series, A New You in 2022. A new year, it's an interesting time for a lot of people, right? Some people view it as like a fresh start. Maybe it's an opportunity to start a new habit or break an old addiction. Maybe you're one of those people that you absolutely just love the new year. It's New Year's Eve and you watch the ball drop and you make a toast at midnight and you begin planning out all of 2022 and all the new opportunities. And if you are one of those people, I have a question for you. Why are you the way you are? I just don't understand it. You want to know what I was doing at midnight on New Year's Eve? I was asleep and I had been for hours, literally hours, all right? Don't care about a clock turning to midnight. It just doesn't do anything for me. Now, in fairness, while I was asleep at midnight on New Year's Eve, I was promptly woken up by fireworks. My wife and I were traveling to Seattle, and we were staying right next to the Space Needle, and apparently the Space Needle decided it would be a great idea to shoot off like 5 million fireworks right at midnight. So I woke up, heard them, fell right back asleep because I was like, don't care anymore. And maybe you weren't traveling, but if you were in Fresno and Clovis, maybe you had a similar experience because every New Year's Eve and 4th of July, we get to play everyone's favorite game show, Gunshots or Fireworks. You hear a noise outside and you're like, was that a gunshot? Was that a firework? Should I run out and see the show? Should I hide under something? I don't know what to do. Fresno's great, right? But for a lot of people, starting off the new year, it can mean joining a gym, eating right, getting organized, letting go of the past, starting a new job, slowing down, pursuing a new opportunity, or simply trying to make it the best year ever. And since we have all lived through 2020 and 2021, 2022 has a very low bar to clear to achieve good year status. Won't be that difficult, all right? But a lot of times, these resolutions that maybe we make, they have to do with our physical health. In fact, I was reading this week that of the top four most common New Year's resolutions that people make, three of them have to do with our physical health, our physical fitness. The number one most common is exercise more. Number three on the list is lose weight, and number four is eat healthy. There's a lot of focus on our physical well-being, and if you saw how much food I ate over the holidays, you would tell me to do all three of those things. Eat a little bit better. And while our physical well-being, our physical health, it is incredibly important, by no means do we want to downplay that by any means. Oftentimes, there are other areas of our life that go overlooked. We don't put the same emphasis on those areas that we do with our physical health. One area I want to look at today is our mental health. It feels like something we just don't think about all that often. Or we think about it, but only when it gets really bad, right? And in fairness, it's kind of hard to notice those subtle changes to our mental health. It's easier to notice those subtle changes when it comes to our physical health. Those pants that fit great a couple weeks ago, are they a little tighter? Like, did the dryer, like, shrink these? What's going on here? Or that flight of stairs that, you know, are at your house or at your job, you're like, did they add a couple steps? Because I'm a little more winded than I was, like, last week. Or maybe you realize you ate pizza 4 days in a row. And while that sounds delicious, probably not the best decision for your physical health. But it's hard to notice when our mental health isn't going well. But maybe that depression is hanging out a little bit longer than it once did. Or that anxiety seems to be just a little heightened. Or those things that once brought us enjoyment, they now kind of feel like a chore. They just aren't fun anymore. Every single January, with our junior high and high school students, we do Mental Health Month. And we've actually been doing this for a couple years. And we talk about everything under the sun. We talk about depression, anxiety, self-esteem, cutting, suicide, personality disorders, coping mechanisms. We lay it all on the table. And we started doing it a couple years ago because there were some suicides in our community. There was actually a suicide in our own ministry. We had a handful of other students that attempted suicide. And while it's one of the things that we continue to do year after year, it's also one of those things that I wish we did a couple years earlier. I wish we had just started that conversation just a little bit earlier. And one of the biggest things we try to communicate to our students about mental health is being proactive about it, not reactive about it. Not just dealing with the problems when they take over our lives, but before they take over our lives. Seeing the signs when our mental health is beginning to slip and then taking steps to remedy that situation. And for a lot of students, it's been very freeing to be able to talk about the things that are going on in their own lives, in their own brains, and talk about the stuff happening. Open up. And this year, I want this to be the year that you get mentally healthy. That you begin to allow God to shape and mold your mental health, to get some of those struggles under control, to reach out and begin the healing process. And to do that, today I want to look at two truths that I want you to understand, two truths that will help propel you on this journey of mental health, two things that need to be constant reminders on your journey. And yes, I call mental health a journey. Because this might be something that you deal with for the rest of your life. You might not be able to completely conquer all your mental health goals in 2022, or in 5 years, or in 10 years. This might be something that you are dealing with for the rest of your life, but getting to a place that you are mentally healthy. Yes, that is a journey, but no matter how long it takes, it is worth it. Now, just to be clear, the phrase mental health does not appear in the Bible, unless you read one of those really weird translations, which I do not recommend, okay? But the phrase just doesn't actually appear in the Bible. But if we look close enough, we can see God's view. We can see God's understanding of what he desires for us to be mentally healthy. And to uncover the first truth in this journey, we're actually going to go way back in time. We're actually going to go back to the start of creation, the start of time, the beginning of everything. You see, in this story, we can learn a lot about the nature that you and I have. And even though this story happened thousands upon thousands of years ago, it still has ripple effects to this very day. It still has things that happened back then that affect what you and I go through every single day. So if you have your Bibles, if you have the app, if you have your phones, whatever it is, I would love for you guys to turn to Genesis chapter 3. And even though we're only 3 chapters into the Bible, a ton of stuff has happened in the first 2 chapters of Genesis. You see, God is just going around making stuff left and right. He's just like, I'm making this, I'm making that. He makes animals, he makes light, he makes land, he makes plants, he makes the sea. He is just making stuff like crazy. And it gets to the end of chapter 1, and he sees all that he has made, and he says it is good, but it seems to be missing just something. It's not quite very good. And so he quickly realizes, I need to make mankind. And so he makes man. He makes Adam. He makes the first man. And he quickly realizes, this dude should not be alone. Good call, God. Man should not be alone at all. That's just a disaster for everyone. And so what he does is he creates Adam, and then he's like, no, I need to create Eve. I need to create the woman. So he puts Adam to sleep, and it actually says that God removes one of Adam's ribs, which sounds incredibly painful, but I didn't write it. So he removes one of the ribs, and from that rib, he creates Eve. And then he realizes, I have made Adam and Eve. I have made man and woman. And it's not just good, it is very good. So he takes Adam and Eve and he places them in the Garden of Eden. And this place is literally paradise. There is no pain. There is no suffering. There is everything you could ever possibly want. There is no sin at all. And it would say in certain parts of it that God himself would come down from the heavens and he would walk in the Garden of the Eden right alongside Adam and Eve. It was paradise. But most of us know the end of this story. Paradise would not last very long. You see, God said to Adam and Eve, you can do whatever you want. You are in complete control in the Garden of Eden. You are in complete control here on earth. But I have one rule and one rule only for you. The tree of knowledge of good and evil, you must not eat from that tree. You can eat from any other tree. You can eat from any other thing that you see, but don't eat from that tree. That's your only rule. So what did they do? They ate from the stinking tree, all right? Like just messed it all up for everyone. And so they messed it all up. They ate from the tree. And you see that God sees that they've eaten from the tree. And he knows in this moment, as he's standing in front of Adam and Eve, you can see his heart just break, not only for them, but for the rest of mankind, because God knows this changes everything. This paradise that we once had, it's not going to be paradise anymore. Nothing will be the same. So in Genesis chapter 3, God is standing in front of Adam and Eve, and he is ready to give them the consequences for their action. Not only the consequences that Adam and Eve will face, but the consequences that you and I face every single day. This is basically all the fallout from their decision. We're going to start in Genesis chapter 3, verse 16, and he addresses Eve. He addresses the woman first. Here's what he says. To the woman, he said, I will make your pains in childbearing very severe. With painful labor, you will give birth to children. Your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. So basically right here, there's a lot in that passage that we're just going to kind of skip over really quickly. But two things happen right there. Basically, the first thing, he's like, when you give birth to child, it's going to be super painful. All the ladies are like, preach it, man. I get it. I understand that one, okay? And the second thing that he's saying right there, and like I said, we don't have time to talk about it, so I'm going to boil it down very simply, is the relationship between you and your husband will forever change. It will not be the same, okay? There's a lot that goes into that, but there's a lot that changes right there. So he addresses Eve, and then he moves on to Adam. And here are his consequences. Not only Adam's, but all of mankind's. This is chapter 3, verse 17. To Adam, he said, because you listened to your wife and ate fruit from the tree about which I commanded, you must not eat from it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you will eat food from it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow, you will eat food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. So there's two things that happen right in this little passage, and in the passage that happens when he addresses Eve. Two things are now introduced into the world that were not there before Adam and Eve ate from the tree. The first thing, this is the first mention of pain anywhere in the Bible. Up until this point, there was no such thing as pain in the Garden of Eden. Now remember, God put Adam to sleep and then took a rib out of him. There was no pain mentioned at any point. If I removed one of your ribs, you'd be like, ow, that hurt. Please stop doing that, okay? Like, that is an incredibly painful process. But it wasn't happening before this moment. Pain is introduced. The second thing is the first mention of death. When he says to Adam, to dust you will return. Basically, your body is going to turn into dirt one day. Your body is going to begin to break down. You have, as soon as you are born, we are starting this clock of when your body will eventually break down. Every single part of your body will fail. And this is the beginning of the brokenness that you and I experience every single day. Because of this one action, pain is brought into this world. Death is brought into this world. And being kicked out of paradise is brought into this world. We're only three chapters into the Bible, and we are left in a place of brokenness. And for the rest of the Bible, for the rest of mankind, you and I are trying to restore the paradise that we once lost. We're trying to get back into that paradise. Now, we're not trying to get back into the Garden of Eden. This isn't some weird Nicolas Cage National Treasure movie or anything like that. But we are doing everything we can to have paradise in our life, right? We want a life free of pain, a life free of suffering, a life free of death. But that's not possible, right? We all know that. There will always be pain in our lives. Physical pain, emotional pain. There will always be death in our lives. For some of you guys, you have lost loved ones. Maybe these past couple months. Maybe these past couple years. You know this idea of death far too well. It will always be in our life. And we do everything we can to fight off death, to make sure our bodies are healthy. I deal with junior high and high school students all the time, and they are like in peak physical shape. They are not concerned about their bodies at all. They'll eat five whole pizzas, and I'm like, you still are way stronger than me. It's ridiculous. They don't have to worry about any of this stuff. They don't have to worry about when they slept wrong, when they were staying at a hotel in Seattle and threw out their shoulder, and they had to go to the doctor last Sunday to get some medicine. That 100% happened to me because I'm old and I'm dying, all right? Like, they don't have to worry about their back hurting when they sneeze. They don't have to worry about their knees hurting when it's cold outside. That's not what they have to worry about. But it's reality, right? All this to say, you and I are broken people. And oftentimes when we talk about our brokenness in the church, we talk about being spiritually broken. And yes, you and I are spiritually broken. There is a separation between us and God. But according to this passage, we are not only spiritually broken, we are physically broken. Mentally broken. We are broken because of the sin and the junk in our lives that we participate in every single day. The first truth I want you to hear today, the first truth that you need to understand on your journey of mental health is because of sin, we are broken people. Our bodies are literally broken. They are not meant to work this way. This is not what they were designed to do. I know it sounds morbid, but it's the truth, as my organs are literally decaying at this moment. At some point in my life, my lungs will stop taking in oxygen. At some point in my life, my heart will stop producing blood. At some point in my life, my mind will fail me. There was not supposed to be pain. There was not supposed to be suffering. There was not supposed to be disease. There was not supposed to be sickness or depression or anxiety or mental instability. You and I need to have a proper understanding of our current physical and mental condition. And spoiler alert, it's not great. It's not good news. Our minds are broken along with everything else. And it's funny though, because you and I, we seem to have no problem accepting that our bodies are broken, but we seem to have a problem accepting that our minds are broken. We have no problem praying for someone when they have cancer, but we struggle praying for someone when they're diagnosed with depression. We have no problem praying for someone who's in the hospital with kidney failure, but we struggle with praying for someone who just got diagnosed as bipolar. We have no problem praying for someone when they have heart disease and their heart is failing, but what about when someone is schizophrenic? Your mind is just as broken as your body is. And we brush it off for a lot of different things. We say, well, you're just depressed because you don't trust God enough. You just have anxiety because you're not close enough to God. You are diagnosed like that because you don't have enough faith in God. And I'm here to tell you that's not how any of this stuff works. Our minds are broken. You and I are broken people, our bodies and our minds. It's why we have to strive to get ourselves mentally healthy, because you and me are not mentally healthy. That's how it works. We're broken. And some of that brokenness affects us mentally. Depression is a result of the fall. Anxiety is a result of the fall. A mood disorder is a result of the fall. A personality disorder is a result of the fall of mankind. Those are the consequences. And for some of you, I want this truth to be freeing for you. Because so often you're sitting there and you're just like, man, I feel shame because of what I'm going through. I feel shame because of my depression. I feel shame because of my anxiety. I feel shame because of what I'm diagnosed as. I don't want you to feel like that. And you have all this guilt because you think this is all your fault. And let me be very clear about this. This isn't just an Adam and Eve issue, okay? Yes, we are dealing with the fallout because of their choice and their consequences and their sin. But if it wasn't Adam and Eve, it would have been someone else eventually. And if it wasn't someone else eventually, it would have been you and me eventually. Because we are broken people and we are selfish people. And we participate in that sin. But I know some of you guys are so worn down by others. You're tired of being blamed for your chemical imbalance. Tired of people questioning your faith. And if you've never heard this before, if you feel like people are shaming you because of that stuff, let me be the first to say, I'm so sorry you are feeling that way. I don't want you to feel that way. But acknowledging our problem isn't enough. We have to take steps to fix it. We can't just sit in our brokenness and feel bad for ourselves. We have to take the next steps. And for some of you, it's a lot of different steps. Maybe for some of you guys, your next step is you need to go to counseling, like professional counseling, not just like a friend that gives good advice. No, like professional, actual counseling. We refer people all the time to counselors. Our discipleship team has actually done an amazing job of compiling this huge list of counselors that are God-fearing, biblically-based counselors that are local in the area. And they specialize in everything. Maybe you need a counselor just for yourself. Maybe you need a counselor for your marriage. You're like, man, my marriage is falling apart. We just need help. And they also have a bunch of specialties, too. Maybe you need a grief counselor. Maybe you need a counselor for an eating disorder or trauma or drug or alcohol addiction. We can get that information to you. We want to connect them to you. I'm going to just plant this seed right now, and I'll come back to it in a little bit. But if you're sitting here right now and you're feeling that tug a little bit of like, dang it, I think he's talking about me. Maybe I should go to counseling. Maybe I do need to take that next step. You don't have to do it right now. We'll come back to it in just a little bit. But if you're feeling that way right now, on the connection card that you got when you walked in, I want you to just write on that. Put your name, put a contact information, just put on the back, I want information about counseling. Because I think that might be my next step. I think I need to actually seek out some professional advice. People that can give you God-fearing, biblical advice. People that can reconnect you to Jesus. People that can begin the healing process for you right here, right now. For others of you, maybe it's not counseling. For others of you, maybe it's you need to actually go on medication. No self-diagnosis, anything like that. No, you need to actually go see a psychiatrist because you have a legitimate chemical imbalance. And because of that medication, you might be able to connect with God better. You might be able to connect with your family and your friends better. But your pride and your stubbornness is keeping you from doing that. No. I can never take medicine. I can never take medication. No, I'm going to fix this. We have no problem taking the cancer drug. But when it comes to a bipolar diagnosis, we feel like, oh, no, I can't do that. It's our pride. It's our stubbornness. I want you to step out of that shame. I want you to step out of that hiding. For others of you, you just need to reach out to other people. You need to get connected to a life group, get connected to our women's Bible study, our men's Bible study, get connected to Regen, whatever it is. For some of you guys, maybe it's not counseling. Maybe it's not medication. You're like, I don't know if I need to go that far. I don't know if I need to those things, but I just feel like I'm in a funk. I just feel like I can't get my mind right. I feel like I'm on this mental health journey, but I'm just struggling. Brent's going to talk about it in just a little bit at the end of service. But starting tomorrow, we're going to do 21 days of fasting and prayer. And they've set up an amazing, kind of very simple way for you to do it. It walks you through every single step. And I'm going to make you this promise. I'll make you this guarantee. If you commit the next 3 weeks of your life to fasting and prayer, guarantee two things. One, it'll improve your relationship with Jesus. I can promise that. Two, it'll improve your mental health. Now, it might not go leaps and bounds like you want it to. You might not go from step one to step 10, but you might go from step one to 1.5, okay? And so for some of us, that is an achievement. That is like, man, I need 1.5 right now. I need that half a step. I need a little bit of improvement. Maybe that's your next step. If you want information about any of these things, please let us know. Come find a pastor up front when we do the invitational song. Come find us in the lobby at the Next Step booth or the information booth. Whatever it is, we want to connect you to those things. The first thing I want you to know is because of sin, we are broken people. And the second truth you need to understand, and this might be something you need to tell yourself over and over and over. This is something you might need to write on your bathroom mirror. You might need to put a sticky note on your laptop at work. I don't know what you need to do, but you need to remind yourself that my current circumstances won't define my permanent reality. So often, when we believe that our feelings that we are feeling right now will determine the rest of our life, we will lose hope. And we will feel stuck. When we buy into the lie that the depression will never stop, when we buy into the lie that the anxiety will never end, when we buy into the lie that the hard times will only get worse, you will lose sight of the future. And I don't want that for you. We can feel like there's something to move forward to. But oftentimes we buy into the lie of there's nothing over there for me. I'm just gonna stay stuck right here, right now. These feelings are going to last forever, and I promise they won't. You're not as trapped as you think you are, and God can help you in your weakness. One of my favorite passages, and not only Romans, but really the entire Bible, is in Romans chapter 8. And Romans is this fascinating book written by the Apostle Paul. And I have been teaching and studying the word for a large portion of my life. I have a degree in Bible and theology, and I'm gonna be honest with you, still to this day, when I read Romans, I get a little intimidated because it has some of the most complex theology you will ever find in the Bible. It's incredible. But what's amazing about this book is it balances this complex theology of every time you read it, your brain explodes and you need to lie down and cry. But then it also has this other stuff that has to do with the Christian walk. Has to do with day-to-day things that you and I face every single day. And you're like, how does it balance this stuff so well? And so Paul is writing to the Roman people, and he's urging them not to get caught up and taken over by their current struggles, because they're facing persecution in this moment. Because of their faith, they are being dragged into jail. Because of their faith, some of them are being persecuted and beaten or killed. And he's saying to them, man, I know it's difficult right now. I know your mental health isn't great right now because of all the struggle that's going on, but here's what I want to tell you. And so in Romans chapter 8, starting in verse 18, this is what he tells the Roman people. He says, I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. And so you take a step back and you just read that passage. You don't read anything else. And you're like, Paul doesn't get it. He doesn't get it, right? Like, it feels like he's trying to downplay what you and I are going through, right? It's like, oh, it's not that bad. It pales in comparison. You and I do that a lot of times too, right? We try to one-up each other with how jacked up our lives are. Have you ever experienced that? Where it's like, oh man, when we traveled over the holiday, we had like a four-hour layover. And you're like, oh man, I once stayed in an airport for 19 days. You're like, okay, all right, relax, Dramatic McGee, all right? Like, just cool your jets a little bit. Like, oh, I got fired from my job today. I got fired from 5 jobs today. It's like, okay. You're just like, we're trying to like one-up each other with how our lives are more jacked up. I don't understand why we do this. We'll say things like, oh, you don't know. You don't have it bad. Oh, you know nothing about that. Oh, you have it so easy. And we try to downplay what other people are feeling, right? That's not what he's doing right here. You see, Paul is no stranger to persecution or struggles or hard times. He's just trying to get them to understand what he has been through because he knows the struggles that can happen in life. He says this in 2 Corinthians chapter 11. I'm going to fly through this because we got a lot to talk about. But he writes this, I have been exposed to death again and again. 5 times I received from the Jews 40 lashes minus 1. Okay, sidetrack. There was a little belief in this day and age that 40 lashes with a whip would kill you. So what would they do? They would do it 39 times. Magically better, I'm not sure. But he says, I got whipped 39 times, 5 separate times. Okay, like I've had all this crazy stuff happen. 3 times I was beaten with a rod. Once I was pelted with stones. I spent a night and day in the open sea. I've constantly been on the move. I've been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my fellow Jews, in danger from Gentiles, in danger from the city, in danger from the country, in danger at sea. I've been in danger from false believers. I've labored in toil and often gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst and have often gone without food. He's saying, look, I know you're struggling because I have struggled before. I know all this stuff is happening. And it's not fun. It's not enjoyable. I'm not trying to put your struggles down. What Paul is trying to do is change our perspective. He's trying to change our outlook. Yes, he's acknowledging what people are going through. He is acknowledging the struggles that he has faced. He is acknowledging the struggles that the Roman people are facing. He's acknowledging the struggles that followers of Jesus are facing. And he says this in Romans 8, verse 21 and 22. This is what he says. In hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay. Bondage to decay. What he's saying right there is, you know that bondage you have for your body decaying, your body breaking down? The brokenness that you feel every single day, the brokenness mentally, the brokenness spiritually, the brokenness physically, I want you to be freed from that. I want you to be brought into freedom and the glory of children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to this present time. I don't know if you've ever been in a room with a woman giving birth before. I mean, we all have. At some point, I hope you don't remember that original one. We have counselors for that. But if you have ever experienced this before, it is an interesting experience. I have a 7-year-old daughter, and I still remember her birth like it was yesterday, because it was a traumatic experience for all of us. And so my wife was kind of having contractions kind of off and on. It was a Friday during the day, and so we're like, well, I don't know, maybe it's time, maybe it's not. So we go to the hospital just to get checked out, and you know, maybe they're going to be like, yep, it's time to go, let's deliver the baby, or no, go home, take, you know, rest, do some stuff. So we go in, it's like late Friday night, it's probably like 10 o'clock. And so we get checked out, you know, my wife's getting checked out and everything, and they're like, yep, we think it's time for this baby to be delivered. We're like, okay. So we stay, we get checked into the room, all that type of stuff, and Friday night happens, Saturday morning happens, Saturday afternoon happens, No baby. And so finally, the doctor comes in the room. Okay, it's time to push. And for my wife and I, that's like World War III just broke out, okay? Because like, even though the doctors and nurses are super casual because they've delivered 400 babies that day, we've never done this before. We have no idea what's about to happen, okay? And so my wife is pushing and pushing and pushing for a couple hours and pushing for a couple more hours. And so finally, the baby is just being stubborn. I'm pretty sure she gets that from me. Can't confirm that. And so finally, the doctor comes in, says, look, if we can't get this baby out by you pushing, we're gonna have to do a C-section. And apparently that was a hot button issue for my wife because she starts pushing like you've never believed, all right? And so she is just like, I will get this baby out of me, all right? And so I'm standing next to her. You know, she's laying on the bed. I'm standing next to her. I'm trying to be encouraging to her. I don't know what to say. You're doing great. Like, I'm used to cheering on sports teams. Like, we're going to get this first down. I don't know. I'm not sure what to say. Like, defense. I don't know what we're doing here, okay? But I'm trying to be the best possible husband I can be in this moment. You're doing great. I love you. I'm so proud of you, all that stuff. And so eventually she goes, I'm standing right next to her. She goes, get closer to me. I go, okay. And so I kind of lean in just a little bit and I'm still cheering her on, encouraging her, all that stuff. She goes, closer. I go, okay. And at this point, I'm like 6 inches away from her face, okay? Like, we're right here. And so I'm expecting her to be like, you know, me to lean in. She'd be like, too close, get out of here. You know what I mean? And like, because most women, they don't even want their husband like in the room. They don't want him in the hospital. They want him out of the state. They're like, you did this to me. This is your fault, all right? I'm having the experiences because of you, all right? So I'm getting close to her. I'm still cheering her on. And we're close to each other. And she goes, closer, now. I go, okay, my wife will back me up on every detail of this. I'm not exaggerating. I'm a half an inch away from her face, and we are staring at each other right here. And she goes, stay there. I go, okay. This baby's going to be born without a father because she's going to murder me in the next 20 minutes. And I don't know if you've ever been yelled at while someone's a half an inch away from your face staring into your soul. It's not an enjoyable experience in the least, okay? But my wife is just, she was an absolute rock star. Eventually pushes the baby out, no C-section. Our daughter is born. It was awesome. It was amazing. And I say all that to say, no matter what woman is giving birth to a child in that moment, they're in indescribable pain, right? I've never met the woman. They're like, it wasn't that bad. It's like, you were hopped up on the epidural, all right? That's the drugs talking. They're in indescribable pain, right? Something that we cannot fathom. Something that is literally impossible to recreate the amount of physical pain that they are in. But what happens as soon as that baby is born? The endorphins begin to flood their mind. The joy that they experience overwhelms the pain that they are feeling. Are they still in pain? Of course they are. That pain doesn't just magically go away. But you see what's happening here is basically the pain is still there, but the joy is indescribable. The pain is severe. The pain is an 11 out of 10, but man, the joy is a 400 out of 10. It is just incredible. That's what Paul is talking about in this story. He's not trying to downplay the pain you and I are going through. He's not trying to diminish the pain you and I are going through. What he's trying to do is amplify the joy that's coming. He's not trying to say, oh, it's not that bad. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine. Just suck it up. Walk it off. You'll be all right. No, he's saying, look, I know it's painful right now. I know you're going through it a lot right now. I know the depression's bad. I know the anxiety's bad. I know the diagnosis isn't good. But man, the joy that's coming, it is indescribable. You will not be able to imagine what joy is coming next. He's not trying to diminish the pain. He's amplifying the joy. And God makes us this promise that one day you will be made whole. One day it will get better. And just to be clear, that one day might not happen on our earthly life. Your depression might stay there for your whole life. Your anxiety might be there for your whole life. But one day, when you and I get to heaven, you and I will be made whole. It might feel like the depression will never go away. It might feel like your marriage will never be fixed. It might feel like you'll be stuck in this job forever, that your anxiety will always hold you hospital, that these are hostage, that these suicidal thoughts, they will never, ever leave you. And Paul knows it's difficult. He's not trying to ignore that stuff. What he's trying to do is change our perspective. He's saying, yes, when you change your view on your current struggles, it can change everything. He says this in Romans chapter 8. Verse 24, for in this hope we were saved. In this hope of forthcoming glory, in this hope that one day it will be made right, we are saved. But hope that is seen, that's no hope at all. For who hopes for what they already have? If we hope for what we do not have, we wait for it patiently. In the same way, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. We do not know what we ought to pray for, but the Spirit himself intercedes through wordless groans. That's the hope that we have, the hope that we are saved, the hope that the Spirit will help us in our weakness, the hope that even when it gets so bad, when our depression gets so bad, when our mental health gets so bad, when our anxiety gets so bad, when all these things get so bad that we don't even know what to say to God, God is like, I got you. I'm here for you. I'll communicate for you because I am right here with you. God has something incredible planned for your life, and I know it might not feel like it right now, but God will be with you no matter what you are going through. He is with you in your depression. He is with you in your anxiety. He is with you in every single struggle you face. I love that song that we were singing earlier about God is going before us, and this is how powerful God is. God is not only with us right here, right now, in the struggles that we are going through, but he is so outside of space and time. He's with us right here, and he's also with us 5 years down the road. He's like, I've gone before you. I know how this depression story ends. I know how this anxiety story ends. And man, it's good. But it might take you a while to get here. But I'm here. Run to me. Don't be defined by your current circumstances. Imagine if the disciples were defined by their current circumstances the second day after Jesus had died. What would the early church look like? Imagine if they're like, I'm done with this. I'm never believing in God again. I'm never believing in the Jesus stuff again. I'm out on all of this. I don't want you to be caught up in your current circumstances. I know your anxiety and depression and all those things is really, really bad right now, but I don't want you to lose sight of the coming glory, of the future that God has for you. You see, God never diminishes your pain. He never downplays your struggles, but he is ready to give you something more, ready for you to experience his joy and his freedom, freedom from our broken bodies and freedom from our mental health and brokenness. God is ready to make this the best year of your life, but how are you going to respond? For some of you, maybe you need to respond by filling out that connection card. Maybe you need to respond by coming up and getting prayer from a pastor or a leader. Maybe you need to respond by getting baptized today or getting connected today or not being defined by your current circumstances. That last fill in your notes, my next step is, I can't fill that out for you. Only you can. Your neighbor can't fill that out for you. Only you can. What is your next step? I don't know what your next step is. Maybe you need to write on that connection card, I need counseling. But I want to tell you right now, maybe you're sitting there and you're like, look, I believe that you guys will follow up with me, you know, tomorrow or Tuesday or sometime this week about counseling, but I don't know if my marriage is going to last through the day. I don't know if I'm going to last through this week. I need something right here, right now. I need prayer right here, right now. If that's you, we are going to have pastors and leaders up front during this response song, and we want to pray for you. We want to help you. Man, we don't want this just to be another message that you hear. You're like, oh, yeah, cool, great. No, we want this to be the spark that lights the fire in your mental health journey. We want this to be the springboard for your 2022. Your journey of mental health can start right here, right now. This is the year for you to focus on your mental health, to not live in shame anymore, to not be defined by your past, to not be defined by your current circumstances, to not be defined by everything everyone else says. God is ready to give you a new life, and God is ready to give you joy and freedom, but it's your turn to respond. And I can't make that choice for you. We're going to stand and we're going to sing. And I pray that you would respond today. Let's stand.